The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Off the Record with Zhivago Lang is sponsored by the Cleft of the Rock Foundation, the Cleveland Clinic, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, RF Bank and Trust, and Royal Star Assurance. You're not alone.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Zhivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call on the show today at any point, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. So you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. We do want to recognize the great tragedy that occurred in the wake of the landing of Hurricane Dorian, but we'll speak about that on the opposite side of the news break. But for now, we have some very special guests to talk about something also important. And I'm so delighted that they can join us today. And this was facilitated by one, Kendra Oh, who's been on the show with us before, with whom I have worked with young people and who I regard very highly in her work with young people. And so I'm going to ask Kendra first to introduce her colleagues as we have this discussion today. Kendra, welcome. Welcome all.
Hi, welcome, welcome. Good to be here. Good afternoon, Bahamas.
Go ahead and introduce your colleagues, Kendra, for me, please.
Okay, yes. So it's so great to be on the show again, Mr. Lang, and thank you for that introduction. So we have with us today Inspector Kendra Wims, and she's going to speak about a new division on the Royal Bahamas Police Force, of which she is spearheading, and the work that they're doing there and what the involvement they're seeking from the community. And then we also have with us Ms. Latoya Culmer, who is, she'll give her official title, but she's from New Providence Classical School, and she's going to share a bit about the school, its relocation, and what the school is offering to the wider public. And then, of course, myself, Kendra Bo, who I'll speak a little bit on the Rite of Passage program.
Why would you bring Kendra's on this show? Mix me up. What kind of plot that is, y'all have going on?
Yes. Listen, amazing.
Yes, go ahead.
I said it's so amazing because we're both doing like the same kind of work.
Madam Inspector, welcome, welcome, and thank you for the work that you and your colleagues are doing to keep the nation safe. Thank you very much. And so there's a new division. I'm excited to hear about this because, I mean, I know a little bit, but I want our guests to our audience to hear you tell us about this new division. What's going on in the Royal Bahamas Police Force that you are heading up?
Good afternoon, Zhivago. Thank you, Kendra, for having me today on your show. It's a pleasure to be here today to speak to the Bahamas in reference to the new initiative that was just implemented in the Royal Bahamas Police Force. This unit, which is the Domestic Violence Task Force Unit, was actually introduced on the 5th of July of this year by the Commissioner of Police, Ms. Clayton Fernando. The domestic violence unit was established, and the reason why it was established, to aid the eradication of domestic violence within our communities and in our country at large. We have a team of competent and very passionate officers who are not only officers, but as well as volunteers who are a part of this unit to assist in this area that is so much greatly needed in the Bahamas, as well as the country, and not only the country in itself, but internationally as well, because there's a lot of domestic disputes as well as gender-based violence that is being occurred all over the world. So the commissioner saw it fit at this point in time to introduce this new unit to assist victims of crime. Now, my direct upline is Assistant Commissioner Delarice Ferguson, who is an awesome person, a person who have the heart for people at large. So when we look here about domestic violence, a lot of people think it's taboo and they don't really want to speak on it, or they really don't want to touch on it. And persons may seem as if there are no place for persons or victims, reference to domestic violence, that they have nowhere to go or nowhere or no one to talk to. So now we have this unit where victims of all type, whether it be religion, whether it be gender, no matter who you are, if you need someone to talk to, or if you need to report a matter, if you know of a matter, someone who is being abused in any which way, because you know there are many forms of abuse, because you have physical abuse, sexual abuse, you have psychological abuse, social abuse, and even economic abuse. But even if you know of anyone who are being abused, we have an active office where we speak with clients, which is very confidential. We assist victims on many levels, many, many, many levels. And we are here most definitely to assist in that regard.
Now, you know, I agree with you that the domestic violence is something that's tended to be quite taboo in the society. And we could understand that, because I think probably one of the most shameful things, I mean, in terms of the shame people feel, is to have exposed to the public that they and their very closest human beings on planet Earth are in conflict, and that conflict is arising to the point of, you know, people feeling threatened or that kind of way and so forth. And it can happen in all kinds of socioeconomic circles, all classes of people, all races of people, etc. And not why we pretend it's only among some folk, it can happen anywhere. But one of the things that I have friends who are police officers who have said to me that domestic violence is really one of the most challenging things for officers to deal with. Can you speak to that for us, please?
The reason why I think it is one of the most challenging thing for officers to deal with is because a lot of time an officer may go to a scene where there is a domestic situation, and in an attempt to assist the victim, sometimes you find that the victim doesn't want any complaints. She doesn't want to make a complaint. She doesn't want to give a statement. She doesn't want nothing to happen to the perpetrator. She just wants the perpetrator to be warned and be of good behavior. So especially in cases where you have matters where victims is continuous, when an officer continuously go to a home and a victim continuously call and say, I have my husband, my boyfriend is hitting me, or there is a situation that has escalated, and the officer is trying his or her best to get the situation under control, and they're trying to advise the victim and trying to advise the perpetrator, then you would find the victim turn on the officer.
I heard that too from officers.
Yes. So then what, Shivago? Then what? But the only intent the officers are trying to do is trying to assist as best as they know how to. But then in that same assistance, it turns around on the officer as the officer being the bad guy, because he's only there to help.
Because in many instances, when you go to crime scenes, the perpetrator and the victim are quite clear, right? In many instances of some fight in a bar or something like that, you know who the perpetrator, or you at least can tell who the combatants are in ways that says, okay, well, these people aren't going to turn around and say, no, that's my boy, that's my girl, I don't. In case of families, sometimes the situation gets heated, people get out of hand, and really, as you said, the victim just wants the behavior to stop, but they don't want to go to that next place where this person, their baby daddy, their baby mommy, or somebody is going to get locked up or, you know, convicted before the courts.
Yes, that is true. That is true, Chivago. But you find that even in terms of, and I don't want to sway too far, but what you just said, mm-hmm. you find that at times, even the cases don't even reach the court. Because mm-hmm. you find that on many cases, even though the officer goes to at length to investigate the matter and bring forth charges, when it's time for that case to go to court, you find that the victim return to the station and say they don't want to continue on with the investigations. So what was the officer do now after putting in all those hours and investigating the matter to make sure that the victim receive justice?
Can I ask you, is there ever an instance in which a victim can be ignored in not wanting to press charges in the case of what might be regarded as assault or battery or violence?
What you mean in terms of ignoring?
I mean, like can the police say, listen, you can't just drop these charges. You were battered, you were abused.
Yes, Chivago. Yes. I've seen it so many times, especially in my office, in the office I held previously before I was transferred here to the domestic violence unit. You find that officers, whether the public believe it or not, you have some extremely great officers over there. And they would say, they would plead to some of these victims, and for most part, man, listen, please don't withdraw this case. You know how many times you came and it's obvious that something happened. Of course, you had to issue, the officer had to issue them at times a hospital form for them to seek mm-hmm. medical attention. Mm-hmm. And they would bring to them, let me tell you how terrible it is to be at times. When you have to let the victim know, to reassure them, say, listen, think about your children. Think about your children if you continuously go through this cycle of abuse mm-hmm. and you don't deal with it, then there's a possibility you may not have a second or third or fourth chance to come and withdraw them out again because it may cost you your life.
But if they withdraw the matter, even if, say, they're in the case of a bear, case of battery or assault, even if they withdraw the matter can't go forward?
No, they could go to the court. They can't withdraw the matter to the station. Oh, they would have to go to the court. Yes, sir. They would have to go to the court.
Yeah.
And they would have to explain. They would have to explain to the magistrate now.
I see.
Why is it that they are now coming to waste the court's time to withdraw a matter of such serious nature?
I see. That makes sense.
Yes.
That makes sense. Okay. And so now there is some dedicated unit in department in the police force just attuned to domestic violence. Now, you know, Inspector, you know, a lot of times when we talk about domestic violence, it is very gender biased. And I understand that because of the nature of the dynamics of where the greater proportion of violence falls, and it does fall on women. Anybody who tries to deny that would just be living in an alternate reality. But it is true that men can be subject to domestic violence. And one of the things, I was very impressed, one of your officers told me one time, he said, you know, Mr. Lang, what people don't realize is just how a woman can come to us and have assistance in ensuring their safety or protection from conflict or violence, a man can do the same thing. In the case where he's having a dispute with his significant other, he can come and say, listen, I want to go and get and retrieve my stuff, and I would like the police to escort me so that I don't cause or get in any problems doing it. I was very impressed with that.
Yes, sir. Chivago, I recall about a year ago or so, I had a case where this young man came to me, and he said to me, Inspec, I have a situation, but I am too ashamed to mention it in an open forum. So I took him in my office, and he explained to me that he was being abused by his wife at the time. He said, but Ms. Wims, I love her so much, and I am so ashamed as a man to even mention this to my family members. And I just don't know what to do. He said, I don't want to leave her. It's the same cycle a woman goes through as well. He said, I don't want to leave her, but I just need someone to talk to her because we have children together. I want our family to stay together. But she obviously doesn't want him. She doesn't want the home. She doesn't want the structure. And this young man opened up to me wholeheartedly. And we sat there for about 2 hours talking about that because he had so much on his chest to get off. And once he was, and once he believed that, and mind you, I provided some assistance to him and as well, his wife as well. And I respect his decision, reference to what he wanted. And as I followed up with him, his life after that, believe it or not, all is well with him now. Because they were referred for counseling. They were referred for counseling on every aspect of what was going on in their life at that time. Mm-hmm. And I've had a few other clients who were in same-sex relationships, mm-hmm, and who came to me privately and expressed what they were going through, what none of their family members knew at that time, even the life they lived. Mm-hmm. And that is why with this unit, the world has changed. We are living in a world that the world has changed.
Absolutely.
The world has changed, Shivago. And that's why it is so important. And it was so timely that this unit came about to assist people. Because matter of fact, the police have been assisting people for many, many, many years.
Right.
But it's just that now what the commissioner decided to do is make it more intimate, where persons could come in a safe space and be able to report whatever matter they are going through, whatever it is,
help. So in many ways, this can be a preventative center, yes, because now instead of waiting till the fight really busts out and somebody gets stabbed, killed or something, you can come in advance and say, listen, guys, I don't want to get myself in no trouble. Here's what's going on. I need guidance. I need direction. I need to know what to do. And you are there to help with that.
Yes, sir. We are here to help with that and provide whatever assistance, they are not clear about.
Right.
On what direction that they need to take. We are here to actually steer them in the right direction.
I'm really excited about it.
Mr. Lang, just add.
Yes, go ahead, Kendra. Yeah.
No, I was saying I'd like to add that there's another component that inspector has to add to that in terms of the assistance that they're offering and then what they're also seeking from the wider community and helping with that. So I just thought it would be an ideal time for her to mention that in terms of the churches.
Okay.
Okay, yes. What we're doing now is the Domestic Violence Task Force unit is just not there, just solely the police. And what we're doing now, we put together a form that will be disseminated to all the churches in the Bahamas, from east to west to north to south, to come on board with us, to partner with us. And that whatever matter, a domestic matter happens, say in the area of, say out east, and there's a church located out east, that victim can actually go to that same church. And that church will have someone, a dedicated person who can assist with counseling, or who can assist that victim. And they will partner with us to ensure that no one gets left behind, that no case is left unattended. And so right now, what we want to do is partner with not only the churches, because we actually started with the churches. We started with the churches, and we are also partnered with NGOs and the Crisis Center, Social Services, the Salvation Army, you know, the National Child Abuse Hotline. You know, we are partnering with every organization, NGOs, every organization to be a part of this organization. This is not just a police, the domestic violence task force is just not solely the police. We're partnering with every organization you can think of that is able to assist us in eradicating domestic violence.
Okay. Sounds great. Listen, we're going to take a break, and then Kendra, when we come back, Latoya, when we come back, we'll talk some more about the initiatives that you all are involved with all around, an effort to make our communities more livable places. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabara Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Letting you know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel like you've been down the same road.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together, and we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Your child's future is full of super possibilities, so you need a super college savings plan to match. With an RF educational investment account, you can get returns well above the traditional savings account. You can use the funds to cover a variety of educational expenses at home or abroad. And if things don't go as planned, the funds are easily transferable. Plan for all your child's super possibilities with the RF Educational Investment Account. Get started today at rfgroup.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. I'm here with Inspector Kendra Wims of the Domestic Violence Unit of the Royal Bahamas Police Force, Kendra Bow, who is all around associated with too many noble things being done in the country, and Latoya Kalma, who is with the classical school, which I have had some dealings with in the past. So Kendra, tell us what's going on your side of the world.
So I just wanted to mention, so Latoya Kalma, she is the director down at New Providence Classical School. Well, what I'm doing and what we're seeking to continue to do is just to continue the work in terms of youth and community development, which is why Rite of Passage has partnered with the Domestic Violence Unit in terms of to bring awareness in terms of to this new division and just to assist in facilitating and coordinating the efforts of what they're putting on. Kendra has some great ideas of what they're seeking to do, and she is definitely the right person for the job for that particular area. And in addition to that, what we're doing and what we're seeking to do in terms of on a wider level throughout the community is...
You have some noise in your background. I'm not sure what that is, but you do have some noise in your background.
Okay. Is it still coming through?
That's better.
Okay. So what is, and so what we're seeking to do, I'm hearing static. I'm wondering if that's still me.
Yeah, you have some noise coming to you. Latoya, why don't you tell us what's happening with the New Providence Classical School, and then maybe even Ken.
Yes, I'll come back in.
Background setter. Yeah. Go ahead, Ms. Kalma.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you so much for having us on your show. Can you hear me?
I can hear you well. Thank you.
Yes, sir. In Providence Classical School. So today we are talking about education, and we want every child in school. We have small classes here at the Providence Classical School, and that means that we have less than 10 children, no more than 10 children in our classes. And we know that throughout the Bahamas, the schools, the classes are full. There are classes, the average is like 20 per class. And in some cases, you can go up to probably 30. And so Providence Classical School has small classes, and we train or we teach children to be lifelong learners. Okay, so we teach them to love to learn. And we don't just give them information that they can regurgitate while taking a test, but it's something that they can use, tools that they can use for lifelong learning. We are located on Blake Road, right above the Westminster College. We have just relocated from our location. Most persons will know us for being in the Palmdale area, but we recently moved to Westminster out in the west, where the breeze is cool and the nice ocean is the view. Yes, we are out west, Providence Classical School.
Hi, Kendra, you back?
Yes, can you hear me good now?
Yes, it's better, much better.
Yes. So what our Rite of Passage is seeking to continue to do is to continue to build our youth and community development efforts. And so what we wanted to use this opportunity for today was that any church or organization that is seeking ways in terms of to reach young people in their respective areas, Rite of Passage is seeking to assist in putting on events, providing training, and particularly for churches, to assist in reaching young people in their particular area. But that church or that organization will be dealing with them. We're just assisting in coordinating the efforts.
Okay. Because there are churches that don't have very functional youth ministries, let's say, and could use some help in their outreach to young people. And you're saying that for those churches, you have a means of assisting them in doing what it is that they are attempting to do.
Yes. And so what we did this summer is we were called in to assist Salem Union Baptist Church with some girls that they were having certain challenges with. And then what we decided to do was to host a summer camp for these girls. And then we connected with different members of the community, like Inspector Wims, like Miss Bahamas Universe, and others, in order to put on that camp in helping to keep these young girls occupied during the summer, but also equipping them with knowledge and tools that they would need to help them to succeed. And so what we want to do is continue those kinds of efforts throughout the year. And so there are churches who don't have an active youth program, but they need assistance in helping to develop that in order to reach the young people in their area. Or if you are a specific organization where you want to do something for young people, we're prepared to assist you in coordinating those efforts.
Okay. Inspector Wims, I have a question. I have a question for you. Of course, you're trying to prevent domestic violence. And so you're trying to give people an avenue for outreach before something escalates to that point. But you do have to deal with issues and instances where the violence happens. And we've seen a great deal of that of late in some of the worst forms you could find. I mean, I know that the police's job then is to pursue the perpetrator, probably provide some protection to the victim or potential victims, et cetera. But Like, is there any work done in what is it anticipated that work will be done with your unit to find out, like, really what's motivating some of this? Like, whether there's with the folks in the psychological departments in the various government agencies or something like that?
Yes, sir. What we're trying to do exactly is to have even a psychiatrist on board with us. We also have that, a person of that magnitude also a part of the unit. So, but like I had mentioned, it's persons who can not only assist even with the victims, but also in some cases with the perpetrators, mm-hmm. to see how we can best help the entire family. Because in some cases, but in particular with domestic violence cases, you have to look at the whole family. Because you have children, you have the perpetrator, and then you have the victim. So, yeah. So when you look at the entire scope of the family unit, regardless, everyone will be impacted by whatever the outcome is. And even in a domestic dispute situation, they are still affected by it, you know. So now, that's why it's so important when I spoke with my upline, the commissioner and my assistant commissioner, Mrs. Ferguson, is that that's why we decided in our discussions that we not only want to help the victim, but we also would like to help the perpetrator as well as the children. And that's where the Ministry of Education comes into play as well. Because the Ministry of Education, you know, all of these kids are going back to school. And whether you believe it or not, they are going back to school with all of these different concerns. Because some of them are coming out of homes that are plagued with domestic violence. And now when they enter into the school system, that's why the Ministry of Education is also going to be a part of this unit. That's why it's so important. That's why it's so important to have everyone on board who can assist holistically, not just seeing the perpetrator being put away, you know, but it's also how we can help, how we can get into the mindset of really the perpetrator of why he is doing or why she is doing what they're doing.
I am so happy you said what you said, the last one, because you're the perfect person to answer this question for me, because we hear talks about it a lot, but people are basically more only speculating. I'm asking a couple of questions. Do you see instances of battered men, domestic violence against men in your work?
I've seen it before, but not on the magnitude as a woman, of course.
But the instances you've seen it.
Yes, I've seen it.
Okay.
And you know what? Yeah. You know what, Shivago? Not to prolong it, right? But yes, no. even when battered men, when I speak with them and they open up to me candidly about what they're experiencing and have been experiencing, and sometimes for years. But shame takes them. Shame. The shame. It takes a hold of them. Because these are persons who are living a lifestyle secretly, of course, as well as they are in society. Some of them may have a good lucrative job or position in society. And they are afraid that they don't want people to know about them. But it's actually killing them inside. It's actually killing them inside because where shame and pride is the focal point in their life, and they are afraid to open up of how people will judge them. It's key word, judge, will ridicule them for being who they are or who they choose to be. So they tend to not want to open up about it. But if someone feels comfortable with you and they have trust in you, and they feel that they can confide anything in you, then people will do so. But some people will do it with caution, because if they realize that they cannot trust you, then they will not open up to you and divulge all their business to you. But I've had persons come to me, quite a few persons, but they never made no complaint. They just wanted someone to talk to.
Okay, because maybe that could be part of the limited, not that it's widespread, but limited knowledge of male battery or abuse. is that the shame keeps a lot of men from reporting, just as some women who are victims of rape don't report because of shame, or are abused in their homes because of shame. They don't want to do it.
Yes, yes.
The other question I wanted to ask you is, have you ever seen an instance of a male being raped by a female or sexually assaulted?
I've not seen, but I've seen cases, not that many cases. Mm-hmm. Not that many cases, because
I'm sure there's not many, but I cannot recall an instance of any such thing even being reported as a crime in the Bahamas.
Right, and like I said to you, even if it happened, Shabago, even if it happens, a male more than likely will not report that. Because it goes back to shame again. It goes back to shame. It goes back to ridicule. It goes back to rejections. It goes back to how people will view them. Or it goes back to their manhood, their pride. So a man would feel more reluctant to report something of that nature. But now, hopefully, Shabago, that with this new unit, that they can say, hey, let me try her out. Well, let me try the Royal Bahamas Police Force Domestic Violence Task Force Unit. And even if they don't even want to come, they can call out. They can call me and they can speak to me, or they could speak to anyone attached to this unit. And they can even ask advice. Even if they don't want to say it's them, they could say they have a friend who's going through a situation. They could say something like that, you know.
Right.
And we will, and listen, I will not turn them away. We will not turn them away. And everything that they say is confidential.
But Kendra Bowe, shame, an inspector, shame is a big part of trying to fight a number of these social, particularly domestic-related issues in our lives, isn't it? Because this notion that the society will look at me as a punk, a wimp, look at me as a no unfit mother, unfit wife, look at me as a failure. It plays on people's psyche and can cause them to make decisions that continue a cycle or continue an abuse, eh?
Yes.
That is so true, Mr. Lang. You know, I spoke with a more senior man earlier this year who called me and was on the phone with me for about 2 hours sharing his life story. And he would have been molested when he was younger by a teacher. And he said this thing just was all through his life. He's gotten married, had children, and all of it. And he was like, this thing still eat away at him all through his life. Now, he's a much older man now, and yet this thing has still been plaguing him. And he finally was able to call me and confess all the things that he was experiencing, that he went through, because he was having a moment of feeling a bit suicidal. And this is the effects from years later. He's then married, children, the whole lot, you know, what we would consider successful in society. And so I think something that Kendra mentioned that I think is so powerful is when she talked about, even if they just want to come and talk, and that it is confidential. And I think that that is something that is needed to a larger degree in our society, is that people being able to find persons who are equipped enough that they can speak to, they can share about whatever trauma that they may have experienced in confidence, without feeling they're going to be ashamed or judged, and not being concerned like now their business is going to be put out there and that there's some consequence that may affect their life in a different kind of way.
Go ahead.
You know, and one of the things this gentleman said, he said, you know what, this needs to get out and people need to know more, you know, a bit more that this is happening. Because for him, he's like, I need someone to tell my story because I'm not going to be the one to say it. And so I think it's just so important for there to be just more spaces, safe spaces, for people who have experienced any form of violence or abuse or trauma to be able to come, to be able to talk about it.
combined with greater compassion in the society at large, because it is the perception of the cruel reaction to our challenges, which we all have, that makes people feel shame. And when we react badly to people's pain, we do so because we lack compassion. And a part of that lack of compassion is nothing more than self-hatred. Like when you hate yourself because a thing makes you feel a bad thing, makes you feel better about your bad thing, that's self-hatred. That's not good for yourself.
Yes.
And so when we have compassion, and people can have both the safe space, but see the society at large as a safer space, a safe space as well. And that's a hard thing, but thank God for the private space, safe space.
Yes.
And it is something I just want to add, Mr. Lang, that's needed for young people as well, which is why there's a need in terms of the churches, even as they're being asked now to partner in terms of this domestic violence aspect. But I believe that there has been like a great falling away in terms of young people being a part of churches and youth groups really being active. And so there's a need, if we're going to influence change and ensure that this generation coming up is equipped with the tools and knowledge and stuff that they need of themselves, of God, of community, then we have to go out and get them. And we have to create the spaces for them to be so that we could train them and we can equip them.
Well, I can tell you one thing. Jesus got the thousands by feeding plenty, because that's what he said to them. He said, would you follow me because I fed you, and so forth and so forth. And similarly with young people, I can tell you, my son has gone to churches both in the United States and in Grand Bahama. And listen to me, you know how to get him up in the morning to get ready to go to them churches. Because whatever those churches are doing, their youth programs are so attractive to him, he wants to be there.
Yes.
So it can be done.
Definitely.
Well, ladies, we have 1 minute left, so I'm going to allow you to quickly, please, give us your final word.
Okay. If anyone wants to speak with me offline, or as well as visit the Domestic Violence Task Force Unit, our location right now, we're still looking for a building. Right now, we're still looking for a building to house the unit, but that doesn't stop the show, Chicago. We are actually situated at police headquarters. That's on East Street. And let me give you our contacts. It's 477-4579. That's myself. 477-4579. And my office contact is 326-0476.
Okay. And then if persons want to reach out to Rite of Passage, so they could find out more ways in which, if they want to build programs for young people, they can reach me, email Bowkendra, Bowkendra, at yahoo.com, or at 825-0559.
All right, and Ms. Coleman, you got the last word.
Yes, sir. I just want to leave our location with you. First off, we are on number 1, Blake Road, that's above the Westminster campus, and our phone contact is 394-7393. And you can also visit us on our website at www.newprovidenceclassicalschool.org or email us at newprovidenceclassicalschool@gmail.com. And we are also on Facebook, so persons can view us on Facebook. And I also would like to say that Ms. Kendra Bowie definitely will be partnering with the Rite of Passage. We understand the importance of producing well-rounded citizens in this country so that we don't have to have so much of the ills that we are experiencing now. And that's what New Providence Classical School is all about, creating well-rounded society, members of the society.
Well,
thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much, ladies. We appreciate you, and I'm sure we'll stay updated about what you're doing. You're listening to Z Live, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break for news. When we come back, we will continue our discussion. We'll be back after this news break.
This road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together. And we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Fidelity, we're good for you. I'm not afraid, to take a stand.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us today. If you want to give us a call at all, please feel free to do so on any of the following numbers: 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. A year ago, Hurricane Dorian, Category 5 storm, caused massive flooding in Grand Bahama and Abaco, devastated Abaco, did significant flooding damage in Grand Bahama, but more expressly resulted in the loss of a great number of lives. I sometimes think that we don't ourselves, fully appreciate the extent of life loss in the Bahamas. 74 people died that we are aware of, 63 in Abaco, 22 Grand Bahama, but 245 people are still missing. Now, I can't declare anybody dead, but I mean, what do you think the assumption is? And so, in ways, that is a massive, massive amount of deaths for the size population that we have. So, Hurricane Dorian was a watershed event in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, caused economic damage to the tune of $3.4 billion, according to the Inter-American Development Bank. So massive loss of life, massive damage, unheard of in the history of the Bahamas, at least the modern history of the Bahamas, if it happened before then, at a time when we weren't keeping the records, we don't know. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. I can't hear you. Go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yes,
all right,
excellent.
All right.
Great.
I also wanted to ask you to make a notice to all the persons that lost their life during the Hurricane Dorian. But I just wanted to probably slightly switch topic just to get your view on something. And I know that you're a finance guy, and I just wanted to get an understanding. I'm a small business owner. I've been following the international news, following local banks and stuff like that. And I wanted to get your opinion. I'm hearing this resurgence of the word recession, right? And I know a recession is when the economy is down, no one is hiring, money isn't moving, and stuff like that. But in my view, I'm always seeing persons hiring. They're saying there's not enough persons to fill the jobs in the world. But I'm still hearing this word recession. I wanted to get your view on exactly what is happening with that word recession. Is that something that we're not paying attention to? Is something that we're missing? Because like I said, from what I'm seeing from my end, reading articles, looking at the stock market, companies are looking for people. They're outsourcing work. They say they cannot find enough people to go and work. But then if for some reason, I just saw that in the World Bank, that was something saying that there's going to be a recession in the earlier quarter of next year. So I wanted to get your view. I'll hang up and listen to her.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. It is a bit off topic, but I okay. So you mentioned that in your mind, recession means no growth, no hiring, and freeze on everything. Actually, that's not true at all. Okay, so that you know, that concept you have of recession is not what a recession is at all. I know that that's what you have come to believe, and many people have come to believe that, but that's not what a recession is. So let me help you with this. Let's suppose an economy is growing at 10%. The technical definition of recession is, rather than growing 10%, that growth reduces to 9% in one quarter, and then reduces further to 8% in another quarter. That means then now that the economy is in recession, meaning it's recessing, it's contracting, but it is also still growing. Right? I mean, like it's still robust. 8% growth is still robust. Right? It's still robust. 7% growth is still robust, but it's not growing at the pace it was. So it's recessing. Okay? Now, that is going to mean, in that slowdown, it could mean some job losses, some profit losses, and so forth. But just even in the most devastating economy, people are still hiring. There's still people who are getting gardening jobs. There's still people who are getting mechanical jobs, certain kinds of jobs. There's just some other jobs. It depends on what the actual industries are in the economy that may not be faring well. But it is not true. Listen, in a depression, which is a severe contraction of an economy over a sustained period of time, not months, but years, in a depression, people are still hiring and people are still making money. So do not get in your mind a notion that some dark cloud descends upon the economy and everything stops, etc., because you hear the word recession. Now, it depends. If an economy is, say, but has been growing by 1% and it starts to contract to zero or minus and so forth, they could be really severe then. But in the present circumstances, even the U.S. people laugh at the notion of being in recession because of the amount of hiring that people are still doing and the low jobless rate there exists in the United States, et cetera. So the problem with what you perceive is your own definition or perception of recession, which is not the actual reality of recession. So if you learn a little bit more about it, you know, and you're right to observe in the economy what you've been observing, it will tell you, yes, you could be in recession, meaning that you are not growing as fast anymore and your growth is slowing, but it doesn't mean that the economy isn't still active. And that's why you can have a recession and still see people hiring and that kind of stuff. I hope that clarifies the matter for you. So we're talking about Dorian's impact and on the country and these years later, as you heard the young man in the news report say, he's still grappling with the realities of things. I happen to believe that even if subconsciously, many, many, many people are still grappling with the impact of Dorian. Every time I walk in my home, which is in Grand Bahama, I have to remember Dorian. Why? The home is no longer the way it used to be because it had to be renovated because it was flooded and so forth. While the renovations would have brought some new, it still is a reminder. And everything is not as it used to be still. As you move about Grand Bahama, as you move about Abaco, you still see. I know I have a friend who just visited from Canada who said to me, he said, wow, it's really something what the storm did to this island. And he's seen the island years later after some significant cleanup and what have you has been done. But he knows compared to what he knew, it's not what it used to be. And so I think there's still a great deal of grappling with Dorian's impact and passage. Government is taking time out to acknowledge that devastation. And I think that makes sense. I think as a country, it makes sense to stop, reflect, think about it. And you can't get stuck in a place. You don't want to get stuck psychologically and emotionally. You want to process. You want to move forward. You want to appropriately grieve. You know, you want and you will always remember your loved ones, etc. I have a brother and I have a sister. I have my father who all passed away years ago, not from Dorian, but passed away. And it's still a challenge. Still a challenge. To think about them and to think about that loss. And you're gonna always have that memory, but it's important to be able to take the time to grieve properly so that you can continue to dwell among the living and be able to function with a sense of wellness and wholeness. We are going to grapple with the impact of Dorian for years. You know, there's a study the IDB has suggests that when you have a massive hurricane, it can take as much as 20 years to recover from it. As much as 20 years. And so, we remember. I was talking to some Jamaican friends who were visiting too, and they were talking to some residents here in Grand Bahama about the storm, and recounting some experiences. One of them was an experience of a gentleman who had done all he could do to ensure that his wife and kids were kept safe and what have you, and then last minute, in trying to get them rescued, he said he watched his wife float away. Float away. Can you imagine that memory? I remember a man saying to me how he and his son, their house was flooded out and they were outside and all they could do was hang on to a pine tree. He said that's what they did for hours. And he said the pine tree scraped all his skin off the inside of his arm, all his skin. Yeah, those are some of the stories that people had to contend with. My home, which is two-story, I wasn't here at the time. I was actually traveling. My neighbors broke the glass sliding door to escape the flood and go and wait out the storm in my second floor room. My neighbors said, "Away from across the street." So people had to do what they had to do in order to survive a very devastating hurricane. We are all praying that we're not going to have to relive that, but we don't know. These storms are not, I'm sorry, folk. If I upset you, forgive me. God, I don't believe God sends these storms. I believe these storms are the natural phenomena of human life, just like floods are, like earthquakes are, like cyclones are, and so forth. And we live in a beautiful country, blessed as we are, and we continue to brag about that blessedness because of the tropical weather we have and because of the beautiful seas we have. But we also live in a zone that's right in the travel path of these natural phenomena. And so we don't know if we're going to get a next one come up, but we pray not. But in any event, we prepare and ready ourselves. I didn't buy my hurricane supplies. Make sure my batteries in hand, my battery-powered radio is in hand, my flashlights are in hand, I have my veg canned food and so forth, my water, because you don't know. But remember those who left us, and we remember the families of those who are left behind to grieve. And we pray for their peace and comfort. We pray for the continuous recovery of Abaco and of Grand Bahama and of the Bahamas from this storm and every other disaster that has befallen us. Dorian came, and right after, and then it came, and it was a double whammy for the country. And we will have to grapple with the consequences of that from a fiscal point of view, an economic point of view, and a social point of view for a very long time. We have children whose academic development may be severely impacted by these storms and by COVID. And that the good thing is that if their emotional intelligence evolves, which can also have been impacted by these things, then maybe the fallout from the academic challenge will not be as severe an impact on their lives, because we believe from the research that emotional intelligence plays a much more substantive role in a person's success in life and in the workplace than does academic intelligence. And so if we can help guide them through the trauma, we just heard some piece of research by Dr. Campbell Bethel and Dr. Allen saying that we are a traumatized society. Wow. The children are severely traumatized, too many of them. And it is that we need to address as a long-term issue, more so in addition to, but more so than the academic intelligence and academic performance of our students, right? Because knowing how to deal with yourself, your own emotions, your own challenges, and to deal with the relationships you have with other people, that is where success lies in this world above all else. And so let's see how that goes. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabar Galang, your host. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, send you know that you're not alone.
You're
child's future is full of super possibilities, so you need a super college savings plan to match. With an RF Educational Investment Account, you can get returns well above the traditional savings account. You can use the funds to cover a variety of educational expenses at home or abroad. And if things don't go as planned, the funds are easily transferable. Plan for all your child's super possibilities with the RF Educational Investment Account. Get started today at rfgroup.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. If you want to call us, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us at 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We have a text here, says, great show as usual. People are saying they don't want, they don't want a memorial over Dorian. Mr. Lang, do you think that the government should not grieve the loss of the people in Dorian? Well, is it the government that's grieving? Or is the government saying the nation should remember what happened and honor the lives of the people who perished? I can understand people don't want a memorial, a reminder of such a tragedy. I can see that, whatever reason. I could see that people want to move on and have better thoughts. But I can also understand doing something that says this was a watershed moment, tragedy for the country. I could see that as well. And so if the government has the power to do the memorial, then what difference does it make whether we think or not think? I can understand both sides of the argument. You know, I see nothing wrong with remembering a tragedy. Maybe that remembering will cause us to prepare, to better manage our situations. And so who knows? Because I don't think the government is wrong for having a memorial for the storm victims. I don't think so either. Says, do you think people will take Hurricane more seriously after Dorian and be more prepared? Some people will. Some people won't care, like they normally do. Dorian isn't the only storm we've had that was devastating in terms of causing some lives and damage. But, you know, people are people. Can't everybody in the same? Some people will be more serious, some people will not. So do you think the government is prepared for this hurricane season? And also there's extreme heat wave in California. People are being heavily chastised for using so much water. And it isn't a question of whether the government is prepared. The question is, are you prepared? Are you prepared for the storm? That's the question. Is the government prepared? what preparation can the government do? Like, what is it that you want the government to do? The government has agencies and entities. They have to do the necessary to ensure that they protect their facilities and their people. But it's up to us to prepare for the storm. The government can put your batteries in your house, ensure that you have shutters, ensure that you have food, medicine, that kind of thing that's necessary for preparing for the storm. We have to do that where we can afford it. Get insurance. The government can't do that for us. We have to do that. So the question is, are we prepared? That's the greatest question. And the answer is probably not everybody. Not everybody. Some people don't have the means to prepare as adequately as they want. Some people don't have the conscientiousness to prepare as adequately as they need to. And and then other people have done the necessary to prepare themselves, and that's what they're doing. And that's as much as could be asked, right? we have a continuous cycle that we go through with these things where we disproportionately assign both responsibility and blame to parties, in particular the government. We don't want the government to get in too much debt. We don't want the government to overspend. We want the government to feed a lot of people, house a lot of people, fix up the hospital, you get a world-class hospital, world-class schools, world-class roads, world-class public services, world-class ports, world-class infrastructure, world-class everything. Where does the government get the money to pay for those things? From world-class taxpayers. That's the only place. So if you want the government to be absolutely prepared for hurricanes, to be able to get facilities to house people so that they can be protected against the hurricane, to buy up plywood so people can board up their homes when it's time, and these kinds of things, just be prepared to pay for it. That's what we have to do. We have to be prepared to pay for it. You know, free lunches. All right? That's the nature of things. And so once again, to all of those folks who have been affected, deeply affected by these storms. I have been, but I fortunately did not lose any family members. Certainly no immediate family members. And what physical impact endured, rectified. I do want to say though, I'm sorry, I don't know where this, some dust or something getting in my throat. I do want to say though that there is a great debate going on about the extent of the recovery efforts, in particular in Abaco. If I had to talk about the recovery in Grand Bahama, which was not as severely impacted as Abaco, I would have to say, visually speaking, Grand Bahama has come a long way, even though it's some essential infrastructure like the airport remains challenged, right? So, I've used the airport in Freeport. It no longer has the U.S. Pre-clearance, so that's an inconvenience to people who are accustomed to the pre-clearance. So now you have to pre-clear on the other side, but all the instances in which I traveled, that hasn't been any onerous thing. Because in point of fact, right, the pre-clearance is an advantage in that if you don't clear, you're still home when they say go home, right? But the pre-clearance don't stop you from clearing. So what happens with the absence of pre-clearance is that your clearance is merely delayed. It's not that it's eradicated. So I have found on the other side, you know, typically sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's not. But I try to not travel. I try to travel light so I don't have to wait for any luggage before I go clear. So you have that. You have that bit of challenge still. The airport itself is small, so if you have large crowds, that's gonna be a problem. to deal with, but it's comfortable enough. It's air conditioned. It's got Wi-Fi. It's got some eatery. You know, it's okay. It's not, you know, it could be abundantly better, but it's okay. Now, when you come back from the U.S., I had an experience the other day. This wasn't what happened all the time. I had this experience with the luggage. Let me tell you what happened. Before, you would go into the customs area, small area, be jammed up. It would be jammed up if the flights are full. And they would bring your luggage from the planes inside the room, rest them down. It was tight. This last time, they put all the luggage on the ground outside and told people, go get your luggage. They wasn't bringing your luggage to you no more. And they just not five of you all at a time, go get your luggage. Just go get your luggage. It was like being at the fast ferry boat by the harbor in Freeport. And it was not the best way. So you still have those inconveniences that tells you you're not where Freeport used to be. Even before that, Freeport didn't have the most sophisticated airport facility in the world, but it certainly had a better airport facility than what currently exists. So Freeport is coming along, you know, and its economy still struggles, even though I would say not as badly as it was, even certainly not at the time of Dorian, or shortly thereafter. It's coming along. There's progress being made. There is. I mean, you know, we so dramatic sometimes in this country when we describing things, we just tell lies on the reality of things. Abaco is making progress. Is it making as much progress? Has it made as much progress as it should be made? You can add all day long. The only problem is I don't know what the standard measure shoulda is. Coulda and shoulda. I don't know by what measure metric we are measuring, but it certainly has made progress, but it isn't where people would like it to be. And that's really where we get our anxieties from in life, is where we get our frustrations from, is that we want one outcome, we expect one outcome, but we get a different one, and that creates frustration for us. But it's not what it used to be post-Dorian, immediately post-Dorian. So that's good. And hopefully, whatever progress is being made, the pace could be picked up. I know that there are men and women working down there trying to service a great deal of demand, and that they are challenged in that regard, but the work continues. And so so the people in Abaco do not have what they used to have in their own island. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller, we'll listen to you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lang. How you doing? Hello? Hello?
I'm okay. How are you doing? I'm good. Thanks.
Oh, I couldn't hear you. Hope your family's doing well.
Come on.
You know, Mr. Lang, in regards to a hurricane like Dorian, should it impact or come to New Providence, I personally believe that we will be in some very, very serious predicament. First of all, financially, I think there's a lot of people in New Providence that simply cannot get prepared the way people say that we should get prepared financially. Another thing I think that has happened over the years in the construction, especially most of the people that have homes, maybe have government-built homes rather than private-built homes. I think there's a lot of shady construction with contractors around here, shortchanging people in preparation, especially with roofs and so forth.
But Hold on. Because let me just mention this: the government homes. You realize the government homes are built by private contractors, right? Who the government hire.
What I'm saying is, during the construction of the building, It's just in my belief. I'm not saying I'm right or wrong, so I'm not debating it. I'm just saying I believe there's a lot of shady skipping out things which should have been done.
I think that's true.
That was overseen.
I agree with that. I've seen that allowed myself
to be going on. So what means that is a lot of the majority of the population in the Bahamas try to move to the New Providence because of the financial reasons and the schooling. Like a lot of the homes, what we call, like, what do you say, over the hill or in the ghetto. These homes were never tested really for no main hurricane, such as Darien, like how Darien sat on Abaco and sat on Freeport for days. So something like that happened in New Providence, which is the capital of the Bahamas, where our main airport, our main hotels, our main medical facilities are. Where are we going to run to on an island 21/7? There's very little hills. Most of our hills, we already cut them down. On the top of the hills, where we do have hilly, they say, have head to higher ground. Most of those areas have buildings or people's homes on top of them. We can't run up there. We cannot drive up there. Most of us down in the valley, like I live in Pride State, which is right next to an area they call Harrow Pond. When I moved down here first in 2006, Mr. Lang, I could have walked from the side of the road out on a dry piece of ground to the pond. Now the water in the pond is actually at least from 2 feet from the road now. You could go, I could bring you down there and say, still have water there, Mr. Lang, below that grape tree. That never used to be there. That is there now. But now we're in a valley, so the water will come down from the hill of Blue Hill Heights down into Pride Estates. Where would we go? We down in Mississippi. We down like in a bowl. And if we go out, if we get out before the hurricane, where are we going to go? I don't think we have the shelters enough to handle the population of Nassau. We will be in serious, dire straits. That's what I believe. We have nowhere to go. If anything should come down here at 250 miles an hour and sit on New Providence for 2 days, we in a whale of mess. And how would we recover? Where we can find the finances to recover? Where right now, Mr. Lang, people are complaining about going to the supermarket to get corned beef and grits. The cost of living has gone up. The cost of gas has gone up. Everything has gone up sky high. Nobody's salary is moved. And a hurricane come in here? I pray for this little country. Nothing comes up the middle of the Bahamas and land on New Providence. Nothing. Not even bad weather. Have a good day.
I was doing a little experiment just now, right? Where I don't interrupt. I don't say anything. And to see how long Sparky would speak. Can you imagine? Mind you, Sparky made good sense. Mind you, made good sense. I'm not saying that. Could you imagine if I did that with every caller? But he made good sense. He made good sense. People are challenged to be able to prepare the way they would like to prepare. And if New Providence is impacted by a storm of the nature of Dorian, boy, I'm with Sparky. I shattered the thing. What happened to us? Mind you, we would endure. I don't have any doubt about that. So let me tell you something, man. Look at the people in Ukraine suffering war, right? Hard and harsh as it is. They can do what they need to do. Say, tell Sparky we do that in the name of Jesus. Sparky wasn't calling for it. Sparky was merely saying it could happen. It could happen. We don't want it to. We're going to take our final break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, send me.
know how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Marsh the car. The lady run into me, marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, everybody.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, where we have been remembering the significant impact of Hurricane Dorian, categories of 5 hurricane on this day, on this day. Three years ago, 2019, September 1. And you know what is interesting about these storms too is that You never figure that these storms actually, like when they're coming, like I think there are some people who have a healthy awareness of storms and what hurricanes and what they can do. Some people, but a lot of people do not. You know, a lot of people really do not. And I think there's a regular underestimating of the extent to which these hurricanes can be disruptive. But if you were in Grand Bahama during Francis and Jane, you don't have that feeling because you know what that is like. In Francis and Jane, Grand Bahama was without electricity in parts for months, in most parts for weeks. And I watched as a lady had a baby in her hand and she was running up and down the gas station screaming, "I need milk for my baby, I need milk for my baby." And she, just a young lady. And so some people have a healthy attitude about these storms, but these storms, like, they have like personalities almost, it seems. And you just don't know what is actually going to happen. Like, some of them are wet storms, so you have a great deal of flooding, and so you get a lot of damage from the flooding, and the roof damage is less. Then some storms are dry, but you get a lot of damage from the wind, and the roof damage is significant. And then you have a combination of some storms are slow, and so that too can create a great deal of hazard because they linger long, and then some storms are fast. But they're fast, and that rush of forces going to do a lot of devastation too. And, you know, but you just don't know. And that's why you just got to prepare as best you can. You have to make some assessment. You have to make an assessment that, you know, my structure that I live in, I'm not taking chances. I just don't know. I don't know if this is going to endure. So why take the chance? Go to where you believe you can be safer. That just makes sense to me, right? I mean, if you don't have the money to prepare, you say, as Sparky said, well, then go where they had the money to prepare, like a government shelter or something like that. And hopefully it holds up. It holds up and stays strong. You know, your church might have a shelter and you go there, but the excuse for exposing yourself to injury because you didn't have the money, I think can be satisfied for the most part by the availability of private and public shelters to provide you with some safety, right? Now, the preparations that's being asked for, I'm sorry, but okay, some money, but I'm sorry, it ain't a puggy load of money now, right? We spend money on much less. All them vitamins, all them sodas, all them bears, all them conch salads, all them chicken, all them stuff we be eating from time to time. If you put all of them together, you could buy the battery, you could buy the little radio, you could buy a couple of cans of a few cans of this and a few cans of that. You know what I mean? You gotta have your medication and this kind of stuff. So come on, man. We could find an excuse for almost anything on planet Earth other than when it's time to party. You can find the money for that. When Christmas comes, you can find the money for that. You can find the money to preserve and protect in life because why? I broke and this is a poor man and me, the average man, and we the grassroots and the government ain't doing this and the government ain't doing that. I don't get that. For some people, I absolutely buy that because their situation is really dire. But for lots and lots of people in the Bahamas, we just making choices between our preferences and our needs. That's all we doing, yeah. And we see the need as less important than the pleasures and luxuries that we are enjoying. So I'm sorry if I upset you, but I don't buy it too often. As Texas, Mr. Lang, we must also blame the government agencies like NEMA for not informing the citizenry in advance of impending danger. The blame lies with the government. I ain't gonna lie to you, bro. I ain't even picking that up. I know, I don't buy that at all. I'm sorry. I don't buy that at all. That there, to me, just says you're not acknowledging the full reality. The government's blame? You really think so? You really think that people aren't prepared for storms because the government ain't saying nothing? Really? That's what has happened? That's been you really think that's the experience in the Bahamas? I don't think so. I'm sorry. I don't buy that at all. We have had instances where we may have had lapses in the extent which the severity of something was assessed or, you know, maybe some timeliness. We've had some instances of that, but that's not broadly the challenge we've had. was the government the failure in the devastation of Dorian? Really? Really the government was? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. NEMA was? No, I'm sorry. I don't buy that. Now, you could talk about post-storm recovery, management, and efforts, and you say, okay, to the extent the government had responsibility for certain things, that may not have gone well. You could say that, but the government to be blamed for, in your words, not informing the citizenry in advance of impending danger? Man. Let me tell you something. If you need the government to warn you about a hurricane coming, you are in trouble. Because this can't be the country where practically every citizen got a cell phone. A cell phone. They're all kind of radio blasting all kind of raga raga all day long.
What? Listening to all kind of Guardian Radio. Zenness. And the other news, the media and media stations around, all they listen to music. And the complaint is, the government ain't telling me Dorian coming, the government ain't telling me this coming, and so forth and so forth. How bad it could be? I'm sorry, I gotta share that with you. No. You have to love yourself. You have to care about yourself. You have to take your own interests in hand ahead of anybody else. And if you don't do that enough and sufficiently to protect and preserve yourself and your family, and the blame lies where it lies, with you and me. On that today, right? And so we all have a role to play in trying to ensure that as the hurricane season continues, we do our best. Sometimes your best isn't good enough. Storm comes and still causes the devastation it causes, still causes the lives it causes, and notwithstanding all that you've done, or what you could do, then you're in the hands of Almighty God, and you just rest right there. So that's all you could do. It's all I can do. But to those people who lost family members, Bahamians, non-Bahamians alike, who grieve these times, remembering loss of mommy or daddy, brother or sister, husband or wife, aunt, uncle, grammy, grandpa, cousin, friend or neighbor. God bless you, keep you and comfort you in this difficult time of remembering. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. Y'all have a great evening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. God's best life.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.